My initial impression of Greenland was that its name was a cruel misnomer. As my airplane approached Greenland's east coast, the first thing visible after the dark blue ocean was a vast area of brilliant white stretching out of sight, the world's largest ice cap outside Antarctica. Greenland's shores rise steeply to an ice-covered high plateau covering most of the island. For hundreds of miles, our plane flew over this white expanse, where the sole other color visible was the black of bare stone mountains rising out of that ocean of ice. Only as our plane descended towards the west coast did I spot two other colors in a thin border outlining the ice sheet, combining brown areas of bare gravel with faint green areas of moss or lichens. But when I landed at southern Greenland's main airport of Nassarswak and crossed the iceberg-strewn fjord to Brattahlid, the site that Erik the Red chose for his own farm, I discovered, to my surprise, that the name Greenland might have been bestowed honestly. Exhausted by my long flight from Los Angeles, I set out to stroll among the Norse ruins but was soon ready for a nap. Fortunately, the ruins lay amidst lush meadows of soft grass over a foot high, growing up out of thick moss, and dotted with abundant yellow buttercups, dandelions, bluebells, white asters, and pink willow herbs. I fell into a deep sleep in the softest and most beautiful natural bed imaginable. While 99% of the island is indeed uninhabitable, there are green areas deep inside two fjord systems on the southwest coast. The fjords penetrate far inland, such that their heads are remote from the cold ocean currents, icebergs, salt spray, and wind that suppress growth of vegetation along Greenland's outer coast. Here and there along the mostly steep-sided fjords are patches of flatter terrain with luxuriant pastures, including the one in which I took a nap. For nearly 500 years, between 984 and sometime in the 1400s, those two fjord systems supported European civilization's most remote outpost, where Scandinavians built churches, wrote in Latin and Old Norse, wielded iron tools, herded farm animals, followed the latest European fashions, and finally vanished. The Vikings shared Greenland with another people, the Inuit. The Vikings disappeared, but the Inuit survived. Why did those medieval Scandinavians ultimately fail to master Greenland's problems, while the Inuit succeeded? A favorite theory has been climatic cooling. Other single-factor theories have included extermination of the Norse by the Inuit, abandonment of the Norse by mainland Europeans, environmental damage, and a hopelessly conservative outlook. In fact, the Greenland Norse extinction is a richly instructive case precisely because it involves major contributions of all five of the explanatory factors discussed in the introduction to this book. It is a rich case not only in reality, but also in our available information about it, because the Norse left written accounts of Greenland. Nevertheless, major questions remain about even this most richly documented pre-industrial collapse. What was the environment in which the Greenland Norse colonies arose, thrived, and fell? The Norse lived in two settlements on Greenland's west coast below the Arctic Circle, around latitude 61 and 64 degrees north. That's south of most of Iceland, and comparable to the latitudes on Norway's west coast. But Greenland is colder than either Iceland or Norway, because the latter are bathed by the warm Gulf Stream flowing up from the south, whereas Greenland's west coast is bathed by the cold West Greenland Current flowing down from the Arctic. As a result, the weather can be summed up in four words: cold, variable, windy, and foggy. Mean summer temperatures today at the settlements are around 42 degrees Fahrenheit on the outer coast, 50 degrees in the interiors of the fjords. Remember that that's only for the warmest months of the year. In addition, strong, dry winds frequently blow down from Greenland's ice cap, bringing drift ice from the north, blocking the fjords with icebergs even during the summer, and causing dense fogs. I was told the large short-term climate fluctuations that I encountered during my summer visit to Greenland, including heavy rain, strong winds, and fog, often made it impossible to travel by boat. But boats are the main means of transport in Greenland, because the coast is so deeply indented with branching fjords. Even today, there are no roads connecting Greenland's main population centers. Weather changes from year to year are illustrated by recent experience of hay yields on sheep farms that resumed operation in Greenland beginning in the 1920s. Wetter years yield more growth of vegetation, which generally is good news. However, if too much rain falls during the harvest season, yields decrease because the hay is hard to dry. A cold summer is bad because it decreases hay growth. A long winter is bad because it means that animals have to be kept in barns for more months and require more hay. And a summer with much drift ice coming down from the north is bad because it results in dense summer fogs that are bad for hay growth. Year-to-year weather differences like those making life dicey for modern Greenland sheep farmers must have made it dicey for the medieval Norse as well.